football's here. It's like daddy's home. So I'm ready to fire off, you know, a few bets, and I'm sure some people in your audience are. If people who are in the audience aren't really into betting, hopefully they drafted great fantasy teams and they can talk about their fantasy teams.
Welcome back. It's the Big Show in the Morning, Sportsnet 960 The Fan. We're into hour number three. If you're listening on the podcast, you can always grab the podcast, Apple, Google, Spotify, or Amazon, or you're listening live, and we love you as well. My name is Matt Rose, joined by Nick Alberga today, and we go down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline to talk to Cabbie Richards from Sportsnet. And Cabbie, it's here, man. The start of the NFL season has arrived. How excited are you?
Man, I'm off the charts, bro. I know you can't go more than 100%, and it's funny that we always hear that sports cliche, give 110%, but I'm at like 175% excitement for tonight. Like, you know, the last game we got was awesome. Like, Super Bowl with the Bengals and the Rams was super exciting. And everybody jumped on the Bengals because it was the sexy team. And Joe Burrow had, like, he's got so much swag. He goes by Joe Burr. They're, like, they have a bunch of, like, elite young talent. So it's been, like, I guess, like, 6 months. I've been waiting. And listen, the NHL playoffs were exciting and, mm-hmm. and you know, the Edmonton's run to the conference finals was amazing and all that, but like, football's here. It's like daddy's home. So I'm ready to fire off, you know, a few bets, and I'm sure some people in your audience are. If people who are in the audience aren't really into betting, hopefully they drafted great fantasy teams and they can talk about their fantasy teams in their group chats and stuff, but I'm very excited.
So, Cabbie, great to have you on, as per usual. I wanted to dive into futures bets first and foremost. Are these the same Buffalo Bills that I know and love, I guess? I mean, is this a kiss of death that everyone and their mother seems to be picking Buffalo to win the Super Bowl? Like, how do you feel about placing that bet right now?
Right? That is, you know, the thing about futures teams, futures bets is like, the Bills are what, like plus 650, plus 700, plus six, somewhere in that range. So you're basically like 6-1 or 7-1 odds to win the Super Bowl. I'm like cautious. I might sprinkle at the beginning, but you gotta, since those odds don't come off the board over the course of the season, you can bet the odds when they're a little juicier. Like when, say, Buffalo starts 2-2, and then, you know, Kansas City or, I don't know, the Ravens start 4-0. So those odds are going to change. But if you really believe that Buffalo's going to win, maybe wait till you get a better number. With that said, yeah, the popularity of this pick is a little bit alarming. And in the past, you know, the Tampa Bay and Kansas, I felt, you know, you felt a little bit more comfortable with Tampa or Kansas City being the favorite. Like, yeah, this makes sense because of their all-world quarterbacks and their offenses. Josh Allen has a lot to prove. That revenge game is like, I can't wait. Like, that may have been our Super Bowl last year, KC. And actually was. Even though the Super Bowl was very exciting, that KC-Buffalo game was immense theater. So, back to your original question about the Bills. I'm cautious, personally. So, I'm gonna wait till I lock in a futures pick. I'll tell you that our crew, SN Bets, were our season-long squad ride is on the LA Chargers. The AFC West, we believe, is going to be like the most exciting division in football this year. And hopefully every game, those teams score over 30 points each. Like, we don't want defense in that division. We just want 42-39. We want 48-42. We want just like blistering scores. So the players that are on our fantasy teams or the players that we're betting on for anytime touchdowns, they cash. How are you? Will you lock in the Bills? Will you or have you locked in the Bills as a Super Bowl future?
So, speaking of, you know, high flying games and whatnot, total for tonight as we dive into the Week One lines is 52. You liking the over or the under for this one this evening?
You know what's weird? Not weird, but like what gives me pause is Matthew Stafford's tendonitis in his elbow. And like, you listen, he will have access to the best medicine in the world and the best medicine that or science and money that's best science that money can buy. So maybe he gets a shot before every game. But like, McVay's been a little, I don't want to say cagey, but, you know, these football coaches, they don't really say anything or anything of substance beforehand because they don't want to tip their hat. So I don't know. Okay, I know I should pick a side. Obviously, there's a ton of excitement for game one in SoFi Stadium. I'll probably lean the under and then sweat it out. But I haven't made a decision. But right now, it's 8 o'clock in the morning, Mountain Time, I'm leaning on the under 52 points.
Yeah, I'm big into NHL betting, and I find the first couple games are really, really difficult. But in hockey, I like to bet the over early on until teams figure out how to play defense in the second month. But when it comes to NFL betting, Cabby, like, do you have a general philosophy that you like to live by?
Oh, that's a great question.
Thank you.
I try to inform myself before making like a gut feel decision. So I'm probably like 70-30 research versus gut feeling. And I have friends who just always say their gut feeling and they're like successful, but then it's, you know, when you're talking to your dudes, like, really, bro, you're 8-1 last week and you just did a coin toss or whatever. So I like research versus just like an eye test. But when I make a decision, it's like my gut feel comes in like, so this week one, there are 10, I believe there are 10 home underdogs, like it's, or 9 or 10, there's a bunch. So I'm looking at that like, oh, this is kind of interesting. Like home dogs, a few new head coaches out there and, you know, some new old lines that, you know, that need to show improve. There's the Detroit Lions bump from Hard Knocks. That's got me a little bit. That's got me my feelings a little bit. It was pretty compelling. I'm like, will I bet on the Detroit Lions at home to cover? I'm thinking about it. So I haven't made any decisions yet. I usually wait till like Sunday morning just to see like some injury news or just, you know, I like to take the weekend to kind of figure out where I want to be. Tonight I'll probably be on the under, and I'll probably lock in some player props. I do like anytime touchdowns because you're just rooting for offense, and you're rooting for players, and you just hope that they have great games and whatnot. So my philosophy is 70-30 research versus eye test / gut feel.
I just kind of come into mind. I would love to see one of your kind of classic segments, a little Cabby and Dan Campbell, the head coach of the Detroit Lions. I cannot get enough of Dan. What would you do with Dan?
It's like he has some funny quotables. He has like, what did he say thing about like biting knees?
Yep.
Or like when you're in the trenches, like anything goes kind of thing. I mean, I'm not quoting him accurately. And then like this dude got super emotional, like he cried like in front of hot mics in a press conference just getting so I'd want to maybe get over there like in the crying thing. I don't know, maybe we're making pizza, maybe we're making Detroit deep dish pizza but with a lot of onions to like make and maybe I can get him to cry again. I don't know. I'm just totally spitballing, and this idea sucks. But that's what I would try. I would try to tap into the emotional side of Dan Campbell again. Obviously, he's super quotable, but that's I think, at the core of the idea is where I try to get.
Not to pump your tires, you're an incredible interviewer, Cabby. I've been watching you for years. I mean, is there a current NFL player that you haven't interviewed that you'd love to spend some time with?
Man, it would be amazing to spend time with Tom Brady. Like, he's in his bleep you. Like, I don't give a bleep years. Like, we've seen that with, like, these, like, iconic athletes. They reach a certain level of status and accomplishment and achievement, so then they don't give a bleep anymore. Aaron Rodgers is in this phase. LeBron James is in this phase. Tom Brady's in. Like, Tom Brady is cursing on the shop. Like, he's dropping mother bleepers. When he was talking about how, like, the Gruden deal, how Gruden blocked the deal to have him and Gronk sign with the Raiders. And Brady was like, you guys chose that mother bleeper, Derek Carr. So it would be cool to interview Tom Brady. Now, it would also be dope to spend time with, like, Travis Kelce or Joe Burrow. I've only interviewed Patrick Mahomes once, so I would love to revisit that and – you know, and not ask him about his brother Jackson, who hopefully has been banished to Los Angeles. Like, when is that kid going to make an appearance again? And then, like, him and Patrick Mahomes' wife, God bless her, they take, like, all the blame for KC's, like, losses just because they're around and people find them annoying or whatnot. But Tom Brady would be at the top of the list of people who I haven't interviewed that I would love to interview.
What about Zach Wilson? He's got that dog in him.
Yeah, and then one of his teammates... teammates showed up to training camp. Was it like a MILF Hunter t-shirt and had like Zach's face on it or something like that?
What's
like,
that, Cabby?
Like, because there was some there was rumor or story about how Zach hooked up with like a friend's mom or something like that, and I'm sure she's a lovely woman. And, you know, salute to Zach for, you know, for enjoying the finer things in life, if that story is true. So I'll just preface it with an allegedly.
Stifler's mom, right? Stifler's mom.
Gotta sprinkle the allegedly.
Yes. Stifler's mom, also an icon.
Last one for you, Cabby. You like your fantasy teams this year?
Yeah, no. Like, I don't know how many pools. I started with the yeah, like, to acknowledge the question, and no. Like, I don't have any confidence in my teams. And I'm sure people out there.
Wow. What a way to go.
Oops, we lost Cabby.
Darn. What a way to go.
Just cut him off there right at the very end. Shoot. We're trying to get Steve Tasker on the line as well to talk a little bit of Buffalo Bills around the corner. Mm-hmm. But I think Cabby's probably in the same camp as basically everybody else, which is, my team's not that good. It's not that great. That's too bad. So, unfortunately, that's it. I hope he has great luck, though. And I'm looking forward to seeing him do a lot of the Sportsnet bet stuff. Because, listen, gambling isn't for everybody. That is for sure. We definitely make sure that we recommend that people stay within your limit. Make sure you set some boundaries and all that type of stuff. But if you're looking to add just a little bit of coin onto the game, it's certainly a good way to do it. And, Cab, can you just tell us, you were just finishing up, your thoughts on fantasy football and your team this year?
Yeah, and I'm sorry about that, fellas. Yeah, I don't have that much confidence in my fantasy team. I hope to go out to L.A. this year. I went last year to interview Austin Eckler, who's, like, big into fantasy.
Yeah.
And he has, like, have you guys seen this? He's got, like, a WWE-style belt that he's going to give away to, like, one of his followers. Like, you have to it's cool. You have to draft Austin Eckler on your team, which I did. And then submit like videos, you know, he's got like that rock and roll yep. sort of guitar strum, like touchdown celebration. Mm-hmm. I think he scored, I want to say 18 or 19 touchdowns last year. Like him and Jonathan Taylor were like 1-2. But I want to kind of get into a fantasy combo with him because he fully leans into it. Like, I feel like he's one of us, even though he's an elite athlete, one of the best athletes in the world. We still got a little bit of the common man in him. So my team, so I don't want to bore your audience with like who I have on my team. Just know that, like, the waiver wire is the key to success.
Yes.
Whatever time your free agents become available, that's when you got to be an absolute nighthawk and be elite with your sharpshooting to snatch free agents off the wire.
It's where waking up for a morning show really helps, I'll say that.
Yes. Oh, you guys should be crushing your league.
It's not that bad. It's got its slight perks every once in a while. Cab, we really appreciate the chat, man. I'm excited for the start of the season. I know you are as well. I'm sure we'll catch up as the year goes on and dive into many bets as the season continues. Thanks, man.
Thank you very much. Thanks, fellas. Good luck.
Yes, thank you very much. That is Cabby Richards from Sportsnet and SN Bets, and we always appreciate when he's able to take a little bit of time, set a few lines. He does the nice features on the television. I know some people think it might be a bit much, but listen, it's the way the sports are going, and he's a great guy to kind of lay it all out for everybody as well.
What do you like tonight?
What did I jump on? I think I hit, I took a couple of player props because I'm not entirely sure on the line, but what do I have here? Allen Robinson going over 65.5 yards in his debut with the Rams. I think he's going to be a nice spell off for Cooper Kupp, and he actually has a quarterback that's helping him out. And then I also have Matt Stafford over 23.5 completions. And I know Cabby's talking about kind of this elbow, but I was literally just reading before we had our chat with Cabby from, I believe it was Ian Rappaport, that the elbow for Matt Stafford feels better now than it did at this point last season. So you got to like that, right?
I think you do for sure. And I think moving forward, you should have a segment or a couple of bets every week when it comes to football. Because that's, you know, somebody like me who doesn't really watch the sport but wants to sprinkle a couple bucks down. I like people who follow the sport religiously to do their thing. And I believe in them. You know, not everybody's going to be right. I think gambling in general is really, really hard. For example, I watch a ton of hockey, like a ton of hockey, and still I'm not amazing. Like I have my moments, but it's tough. It's a tough thing to do is bet on sports, whether it's football or baseball or the NHL. So I'd like to see a little betting segment from you.
Yeah, well, we actually did it last year where every Friday when I was producing the morning show, we would do our best bets. And we would all have to pick like three lines over the course of the week. And I made a nice little intro for it and everything. So hopefully we will start to bring that back over the course of the season. I worked very hard on the intro as well. So if we can bring it back, that would be that much better. I might even play it for you in the next segment. I just might.
I'm pumped up. I'm fired up for this.
Let's switch it over. We're going back down the Alice Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline to talk to Steve Tasker, who was formerly a member of the Buffalo Bills and now covers the Bills. Steve, how are we doing today?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on, guys.
It is an absolute pleasure. How fired up are you for the start of the season here today?
It's been a long time coming. We've been talking about it for months and months and taking baby steps towards getting here. But finally, you know, got to get to tonight and finally see the thing kick off. But it's been a long time coming after a season that ended all too soon for the Bills.
The program is called One Bills Live. I guess before we get into the actual Buffalo Bills question, I just want to ask, how have you kind of liked, I know you've been doing the analysis stuff for a while now, but how have you liked moving into this new kind of show?
Oh, it's been great. I love doing it. I love being, I did the analyst work for CBS for a lot of years and went all over the National Football League. And now that I'm back in Buffalo doing the Bills, it's nice to have a team. You feel like you have a little skin in the game and you don't have to be so objective. You know, nobody cares if I'm a homer for the Bills these days. So it's a lot better place to be.
Steve, obviously exciting times to get set for the opener. Is it outlandish to say this is a statement game? Maybe it's better to say it's a measuring stick game.
Yeah, it is all of that. I mean, it's there's a lot in this game and a lot of different levels to what it could mean. If the Bills, you know, certainly it's not a make or break for anybody's season, the Rams or the Bills. I mean, it's certainly we put a lot of importance on it, and there'll be overreactions tomorrow no matter who wins or loses. The only way I think it's a statement game is if one of these teams blows the other out. I don't mean like by 10 points. I mean like by 25 points or 30 points. If that happens, then it turns into a little bit of a statement game. But I don't see that happening for either one of these teams. They're both too good. Both the offenses and both defenses have been in the top five, if not number one, in a ton of categories, not just last year, but for the last 2 years. These are two really good football teams. So we'll see how this game plays out. But win or lose for either team, it's not a season ender or a season maker, unless it goes lopsided one way or the other.
Losing Tre'Davious White is huge. How are they going to mend that gap at corner, and how's the defense looking this year?
Well, the defense looks a lot better up front. Certainly, Tre'Davious White not being in there is a huge loss for the Bills. He's a solid guy, and they trust him. Dane Jackson, who took over for Tre'Davious last year, played extremely well and will probably start at corner one for the Bills. But, you know, you're looking at Cooper Kupp and Allen Robinson for the Rams. I mean, two number ones. So it's going to be a big test for the Bills secondary. Now, certainly Micah Hyde, Jordan Poyer, the best safety tandem in the league, or one of the best safety tandems in the league, they're going to be able to help those young corners out. But there's only so much you can do. I think Tre'Davious White's absence is probably as big a hole as there is in this entire team. Not that it is that big a hole, because they do have, you know, a number one draft pick in Kyir Elam taking over for him. And behind him, a surprising rookie as well in Christian Benford out of Villanova, who absolutely took the Bills by storm during the preseason, played well enough to just climb through the depth chart, and now there's a chance he'll take some reps there and perhaps even platoon with Kyir Elam. Those two guys have played extremely well as young players, but, you know, it's different in the preseason, as we all know. We'll see how they do. But Tre'Davious White not being in there is probably as big a concern defensively as the Bills have.
On a scale of one broken table to 10, Steve, how excited is Bills Mafia for Von Miller's debut tonight?
Yeah, I think it's like 20 broken tables tonight. I mean, they're really people have been looking for this for a long time, and there's still people who can't, you know, they're pinching themselves to even believe that they've got a guy like Von Miller, a guy with his credentials and basically from what we've seen in the preseason, how much gas he has left in the tank. The guy really looks like he can still play at a high level. Plus, going into the LA Rams building and playing with him on our team rather than him on their team, it couldn't be more exciting for Bills fans.
What about the offense? We know Josh Allen is Josh Allen, the stallion himself, but do we like the weapons around him? Stephon Diggs, Devin Singletary, Dawson Knox, a pretty good group. Are you satisfied with the offensive pieces around Josh?
Yeah, I think they really feel good about where their offense is. Their offensive line got a little bit of an upgrade inside. Roger Saffold coming over from the number one Tennessee Titans. Spencer Brown going to get the start at right tackle. Of course, Deion Dawkins and Mitch Morse. The right guard is Ryan Bates, who's finished the season last year. And really, you look, when Bates came off the bench last year, this offensive line really took off and started to run the football a lot better. I don't know that he was the only reason for that, but certainly he wasn't a reason it didn't happen. So they really feel good about the upgrade. They to back up both tackles, they've got Kit Kessenberry, who was the right tackle, starting right tackle for the Titans last year as they went on to the number one seed. So they got two starting offensive linemen from the Tennessee Titans from last year's number one seed, and now they're playing for the Buffalo Bills in their offensive line. Actually, one of them didn't even make the starting lineup. He's backing up. So they feel deep at offensive line, and the weapons they have with Gabe Davis taking over as wide receiver number two behind Steph Diggs. Gabe Davis of the four touchdown passes at the Chiefs game last year to end up. Isaiah McKenzie taking a larger role. His speed will give them an added dimension. And also rookie James Cook, who is a running back who can split out wide and run routes and also take handoffs in the backfield. That gives them some versatility that they haven't had in a long time. So they really feel good about where they're at. Josh Allen coming into year number five. Ken Dorsey, the new offensive coordinator, is really the biggest question mark. But I think that comes from outside the building, people like us. He has been in this building. This will be his fourth year in the building. First as offensive coordinator, but for 3 years he was sitting beside Josh Allen in the quarterback room having, you know, conversations every day about how he thought, what he liked, what he didn't like, and how things should be going and what they're trying to do. So not as about as smooth a transition as you could possibly have for a new offensive coordinator. And so they feel really good about their offense. Don't know exactly if it's going to look way different or just about the same as it did at the end of last year, but even if it does look the same as it did at the end of last year, everybody will be pretty happy with that.
You like the new contract for Dawson Knox?
I do. They got him. It puts him up ahead of a lot of tight ends. He's being paid like one of the top tight ends, not the top tight end, but he earned it. He's young. He's gotten better every year. He's done everything they've asked him to do. In whatever role they've given him, he has excelled and improved in every area of his game, and he continues to do that. So for that reason, and plus, you know, he's a tremendous locker room guy. He does everything they want him to do on and off the field. He's a tremendous member of the community. So they got some positive PR from this. This wasn't just a football move either. So he's also one of Josh Allen's best buds. So all of that mixed into that stew gives him a new contract. He's here till 2026, and I think it's exactly the right move to make for a league that's headed towards offense. Tying up your best tight end is a good move.
And finally, we've talked about the ultimate goal being a Super Bowl for this team. If you're looking at the Bills right now, what's one part that you think might hold them back from that ultimate goal?
Well, the fact that they don't play in a vacuum, I mean, it's a hard league to win in. It's the same thing as always. They've got everything they need to win it. They've had everything they've needed to win the Super Bowl for 3 years. They could have done it in 2020, let alone last year when they were playing better offense than just about anybody in the league. They've got everything they need. But when it comes to, they've got to get in the playoffs, no question, get as good a seed as they can, hopefully the number one seed to get home playoff games. But when it comes, push comes to shove, when the playoffs start, they have to play well on game day. They've had a year, 2 years ago in 2020, where they played their worst game in 2 months, and the Chiefs played their best game of the season. They lost by 2 touchdowns. Last year, lose a coin flip to give the Chiefs the ball instead of having the Bills the ball. Both defenses were spent. They couldn't stop anybody on either side of the football, on either team defensively, and the Chiefs win the coin flip, and they go in for the touchdown. So we'll see if what it takes this year, but they've got enough in this building to go to and win the Super Bowl. But as always, the thing that's holding them back, there isn't just one thing. There's 31 other things, and that's every other team in the league.
It's a very fair point. Really appreciate the time today, Steve. Enjoy the game. We're very excited for the start of the football season, and I know you are as well. Enjoy this tilt tonight. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Guys, thanks for having me on. I enjoyed it.
There you go. That is Steve Tasker from Buffalo, formerly with the Buffalo Bills, played all over the NFL, really, and now doing some work covering the Bills. He's with One Bills Live on WGR Sports Radio 550 and MSG. He's the co-host there. And his Twitter profile is full of all sorts of stuff in relation to the Bills. You can find him at Steve Tasker 89, the former All-Pro member of the Buffalo Bills. That was a fun chat, though. I'm excited for this game. Thursday Night Football, baby.
Looking forward to it. Yeah, I'm going to check it out tonight. Got some softball as well, but definitely going to check out the opener because usually I'll check out the opener. Love the Super Bowl and a couple games here and there. As you know, I'm not religious about the NFL by any stretch. Very into hockey, clearly. But yeah, I will check it out. Obviously, you have the defending champs and you have the team that everybody's picking, so the intrigue's there for sure.
The intrigue is there, no doubt. Steve and Cabby joined us down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline, 14-time Consumer Choice Award winner for takeout or delivery, 403-248-3344, or you can dine in at Atlas Pizza, 6060 Memorial Drive. And like Cabby said,
it's like daddy's home.
It's like daddy's home. Football is here. What you want to talk about is next. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
What are you most excited about when it comes to the Calgary Flames season? Like, is there one player you really, really want to see or one thing you're looking for?
I have a nervous excitement about watching the Flames because I'm a firm believer that anytime that you kind of have a very aggressive offseason, sometimes it can take things a little bit of time to gel. And I wonder if there might be some of those instances off the top. Now, granted, the players that the Flames brought in Uyghur and Kadri and Huberto, they are all very much veteran players that I don't expect to be, you know, floundering, shocked, you know, taken aback by being in a new place and being on a new team and having some pretty big aspirations as well. But I would say, number one, I'm just excited to see how Daryl Sutter kind of throws the lines and throws the pairings together to at least start the preseason. And I also am intrigued to see if Jacob Pelletier gets a spot on this team. So those would probably be the three-ish things that I would be most excited to see for the Calgary Flames is the new-look lines. How do the new guys adapt and do they do it quick? And is Jacob Pelletier going to be on this team come, you know, October 13th, whenever the season opens?
Or is it going to be Evan Rodriguez, right? The name that's been linked to this market for quite some time. A lot of people think there's just something else to fall when it comes to Calgary. Maybe it's a trade. They trade some of their depth on the back end to get somebody up front. But yeah, I just think you look at the offseason in general, just from where it started to how low the team was and how the fan base was so low to where it is now with just the optimism. Coming off a very, very disappointing Battle of Alberta where they were just grossly outplayed or outscored. I mean, that was a crazy, crazy series. But, you know, a lot of people had lofty expectations for this team. So I'm very curious, you know, to see how that factors in moving into this season, not only in their next installment of the Battle of Alberta with the Oilers, but moving forward as one of the premier teams potentially in the Western Conference. Because you do remember every time they seemed to play Colorado last year, it was a really, really close game. And it seemed like the Flames just had the better of Colorado through the regular season. Now the playoffs are a different story, but I think those two teams are really close, and people didn't give Calgary as much as they should in terms of how close they were to Colorado last year.
Yep, I would certainly agree. And listen, the Colorado Avalanche more so than not have subtracted more than they have added this offseason, right? You lost Kadri. You're able to retain several players in Nichushkin and Lehkonen and Manson, but they still had to subtract a little bit from this roster as well. There's no more Darcy Kemper. You've got a couple of goaltenders who have never really been number ones, like Alexander Georgiev has been at times when Igor Shesterkin has gone down with injury, but he's never really grabbed a hold of a net and never relinquished it. And then Pavel Francouz is 32 years old. He won that series against the Edmonton Oilers, but I would have argued that, you know, they could have had Mike Smith in that matchup and they probably would have beat the Oilers as well.
Pretty much. Like, that's my lasting memory from that series, unfortunately, was Jacob Markstrom. And just more so the fall from grace, how great he was in the regular season. 9 shutouts. And I understand this team is really, really good defensively. So you can't say that Markstrom was like a Vezina candidate or anything, but he was an upper echelon goalie in the league and just didn't live up to expectations. So I think if there's one player on the team that I think has to have a bit of a chip on their shoulder, maybe it's a Jacob Markstrom. Like, I'm very curious to see how he comes out this season and ultimately if they get to the playoffs, his response, because it's a tough position to play. But let's not forget, they're paying him significant coin to be that guy to lead them to something substantial, right?
4 more years at $6 million per. Last season, he played in 63 games. I wonder what the number ends up being when all is said and done. Dan Vladar's
55,
got,
maybe?
I think that's probably ideal, but at the same time, it's Dan Vladar is the backup. 25-year-old Dan Vladar's got 1 more year at $750K. And yes, things started out really well for Dan Vladar in the most recent season, but then he also fell off a cliff and he lost the trust of the head coach. And as a result, he was barely getting any starts. And Jacob Markstrom was playing a ton of games down the stretch.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people believe that it really did hurt him in the long run when it came to the postseason. Now, for me, I thought he was a very good goaltender in the first round against Dallas. I thought he was really overshadowed by the play that Jake Oettinger was putting forth. But I thought that Markstrom was probably a top three, top four goaltender in the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs across the entire slate. And it was just kind of overshadowed by some of the stuff that we saw from Jake Oettinger. So I don't know. I find it hard to buy into the fact that it was the hard regular season more so than losing a key defensive piece in Chris Tanev and having to slap things together and the Flames being on their heels for a lot of those games. Like, it's Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. They put you on your heels. That's what they do.
It really was a season of what ifs, right? If you do recall, it was December, and it seems like it was years ago now. But yeah, like the COVID shutdown and the COVID outbreak, I should say, for Calgary, right? Where the schedule really changed and they lost all their momentum from the first half, because that was one of the bigger stories of the league in the first half, is how good Calgary was. Like, I went in the last season writing Calgary off completely. I said, you know, what are they bringing Zadorov and these type of guys in and get Branson and, you know, I was proven wrong and I admitted it. And then sort of that break happened in December. And after that, they weren't as strong. I know they found their stride a bit later in the season, but not to give this team excuses, because every team's dealing with things, especially last year with COVID. But that's one of my lasting memories from the season. So, you know, yeah, I'm excited to see Huberto and Kadri and those guys, how they mesh with the likes of Lindholm and Mangiapane. And obviously, you know, we'll see if Mackenzie Weegar can sign an extension between now and puck drop to the season. But to me, it's all about goaltending. What's the response going to be like from Jacob Markstrom?
Yeah, and that's got to be the biggest question, because I think he's going to have a big chip on his shoulder. And I definitely encourage Flames fans to go listen to the interview he did with 32 Thoughts, because I thought it was outstanding. I keep saying it because there's a lot of stuff in there where he talks about the upcoming season and the blue line that the Flames now have and how they can really compete in this Pacific Division and in the Western Conference. So I'm fired up to see what he brings to the table. I think he's been preparing very hard for this off during the offseason for the upcoming year. But one of the biggest questions will be, how much does Dan Vladar play and spell off Jacob Markstrom? And do you get a fully healthy year from Jacob Markstrom, knock on wood? Because that hasn't necessarily always been the case.
It's funny. We talked about that earlier with Ian Mendez, right?
Yeah.
Like the split. It's a tandem share league. We talked about it earlier this week when it comes to my stuff coming out in terms of fantasy hockey for Sportsnet.ca. Just the volatility surrounding the goaltender position and what that means long term. Like even a Darcy Kuemper last year wins a Stanley Cup, but I think for the most part, he was rather pedestrian in that run. I just think Colorado was just way better than anyone else. So like, you know, the common question is how much rest to rust type of conversation do you want to have with your number one? And off that, like a lot more teams are implementing a timeshare sort of tandem system. But having said that, I think you look at recent cup winners, there always seems to be that number one or that definitive number one. I think you look at Colorado, maybe it's an example of, yeah, I know Kuemper started the majority of the games, but was he really the definitive number one, or was he pretty much the best option they had, right? So I think on a yearly basis, and we talk about this every offseason, where there's a goalie carousel of sorts and teams try to figure out what they want to do. But we're definitely trending in a direction of analytics and numbers and data where you're going to see like a 1A, 1B more prevalent than the year previous. And I think we're just going to continue to head in that direction, if that makes sense.
I would completely agree, because even you look at the Western Conference, I'd say only half the teams have a workhorse goaltender in between the pipes. The Ducks have Gibson. The Flames have Markstrom. The Oilers now have Campbell. I would say the Kings are probably a split. Sharks are a split. Kraken, maybe, but I'd lean to them being a split. The Canucks have Demko. The Knights would have had Leonard, but now he's down, so they're going to be a split. Coyotes, same deal. Chicago, same deal. Colorado, I would throw in that category as well. Dallas has Ottinger, but even then, last season, he wasn't their number one. This would be his first full season as just a straight-up number one goaltender. Minnesota's got Fleury. Nashville's got Saros. Binnington in St. Louis. Hellebuck in Winnipeg. Like, that's pretty much only half of the conference that has number one workhorse goaltenders. It's a trend that we're starting to see disappear. And for fantasy purposes, I think a lot of general managers, armchair general managers, not overly stoked.
Very volatile position, and I, for one, have been promoting four-goalie systems for the last couple of years. It depends on how big your league is, but I will say I've had success in having four goalies, but I just think you have to put a bigger emphasis on getting an elite guy early. If it's not just Shesterkin or Vasilevsky, maybe it's a Saros, maybe it's a Markstrom. In love with Thatcher Demko going into the season, Ilya Sorokin, same type of conversation, because after you get outside the top 12 to 15, I think you're gambling. Obviously, it's a bit of a bet and a gamble, you know, going after guys you think are going to be good, right? Like Vitek Vanacek in New Jersey, guys like that I'm talking about. It's just a tougher conversation to have. And it just shows you that it's hard to find premier netminding. It's, you know, it's very similar to the NFL. Like the teams that win always have really, really good quarterbacks. And that's why every team is always chasing, you know, an elite quarterback. They're hard to find, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And well, even then, you look around the NFL and the difference between a good quarterback and a great quarterback means a lot. Like you can get everything. A guy who comes in and does the job and completes a season in a game managing situation, or you can go get a bona fide winner. And those are much more far and few between. Yeah. Tomorrow, I really want to dive into some fantasy hockey stuff. What do you got coming out tomorrow?
Yeah, so I got my top 250 fantasy hockey rankings coming out tomorrow. I've been working on them for like the better part of like 2.5 months, even dating back to the conclusion of the Stanley Cup Finals. So I'm looking forward to unveiling that. You'll see who my highest ranked Flame is, where I have Jacob Markstrom. Suffice it is to say, I feel really, really good about the prospects of the Calgary Flames in fantasy hockey. So yeah, that's coming out tomorrow. I got my top rookies to watch next week. I have sleepers coming out in a couple weeks and bounce back candidates. So I'm getting ready for my drafts. I know we're still probably about 3 weeks away or so, but I think it's never too early to strategize and prepare.
Yes, sir. I would have to agree. Like once the NFL starts, now it's time to start thinking about hockey fantasy as well. Who are my keepers going to be? All that type of thing. But let's get into it. What you want to talk about with just a few minutes left in our show here on Thursday. What you want to talk about brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. The hunting season gun safe sale is on now. Save up to $600 on Braun EV Series gun safes. Visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com. Someone's mad because I said that you could have swapped goalies in that series and it wouldn't have mattered. The Oilers-Colorado series had how many one-goal games, and you think the goaltender didn't matter? There was one one-goal game in that series. Now, there was some empty netters and stuff as well, but like there was an 8-6 game. Okay, you want to talk to me about goaltending? Sure, right on. There was a 4-0 game. Did Francois really steal that one?
No,
I don't think he did. What, he had like 16 saves in that game. He barely had to play.
He was just there.
Yeah, and then it was the overtime game and another 6-5 barn burner. Like these weren't 2-1, 1-0 tight games. I'm going to stand by my stance the goaltenders could have swapped and Colorado still would have won that series.
Yeah, they were the best team by far.
It wasn't close.
Not to say that Edmonton didn't deserve to be there in the conference final. Like, they had a really impressive run, but you're not
and
winning a cup with...
And they were banged up.
Yeah, yeah. You're not winning a cup with Mike Smith, I'm sorry.
No. So we'll see what happens moving forward. Boys, if Pelche made the team this year, don't we think he would be better positioned to thrive in the top six? Maybe save the cap space for trade deadline injury protection. I don't think so. Just because his game isn't strictly offense. He does a little bit of everything. So I think putting him on a third line and giving him a lot less responsibility and being like, hey, go play with Michael Backlund. It's a pretty good center to start your career with, especially in like a third line role. I think that would be great. But I also know that the Flames typically don't just hand young players positions. And I don't know if that's something Daryl Sutter would be excited to do either.
I was going to say, like, I think they'll give this kid every opportunity. I think the recent example is Dylan Dubé, how hard he had to scratch and claw to finally be a full-time member of this team, right? So, like, I think Pelche, I think that he's going to get a shot. There's no doubt about it. And I do agree with the text that in this cap world, if you're a team like Calgary who aims to contend in a perfect world, you bring in a guy in a PTO, a veteran-type player in a PTO, and you have him duke it out with the youngster and then make a decision, because every cent you can save under the cap and you have a guy like Pelche on his ELC, I mean, can give you a bit more spending money when it matters at the deadline. So that's a really good point. I liked it.
Also, kind of a what if question, but do you guys think the NHL will solely rely on analytics over the eye test in the future? And will the first overall pick solely be based on analytics only, or are we already there? I don't think it'll ever be solely analytics, especially because analytics at junior hockey are sketchy, can be sketchy. Like, the thing is, you don't just, like, play the game on a computer and the numbers pop out. Like, people still have to take all of the data. They still have to take the data from the games and then apply it. Yeah. So, you know, that would imply that there's a lot more eyes on all of these type of games. So, perhaps, but I don't know. It's a tough one.
It's a tool, okay? That's as far as I'll go in that conversation for analytics. It's a tool. I have a lot of friends working in hockey at high levels and stuff like that, you know, CHL. It's definitely a tool. But I was thinking about this the other day. Like, I don't know how it quantifies clutch factor or will to win or, for example, as I mentioned to hit the beginning of the show, what happens if somebody's not feeling well or they got food poisoning and you put them out there and you say, oh, the analytics suggest that he's going to, you know, do this and do that. Like, it's just, I don't want to call it flawed. I just want to call it a tool. I just don't think it can be everything, because I think we've seen in recent memory these analytics-driven teams. Now, I get Tampa is big into that. Like, every team at this point is big into that. But how much success have the analytics-first teams really had, whether it's Arizona or the Toronto Maple Leafs or list your team? Mm-hmm. Not very successful is the answer.
Who is Nick's most favorite athlete he has met?
Ooh,
that's a tough one. Because if you've been listening to the show, Nick gets out on the town. He meets people. It's Toronto. There's a lot of big people out there. You'll meet some celebrities.
I always wondered getting into hockey, because I've been a lifelong hockey fan. You know, who would it be? I'm just trying to think of who I've met. Like, you're going to laugh, but like my favorite player over the last 15 years, he just signed with Ottawa, Claude Giroux. When I met Claude Giroux, I was fired up, and he was a beauty. Jake Voracek, I've met in person. The guy's an absolute beauty. I know these aren't like household names or like big time hockey names, but like, I don't know. Sometimes I meet somebody and I'm like, your personality rocks. And even when you get to interview them, I think John Cooper's in that conversation. Anybody who gets a chance to meet John Cooper, the guy's an absolute stud. Bruce Boudreau, like, there's a lot of great people in hockey, and for the most part, it's been hockey people. So yeah, those would probably be my answers off the top of my head, not really thinking about who else I've met. You stumble upon people in this industry, as you know.
Cooper's a good one. Like, every time I think of John, I think of that scene from Quest for the Cup, that YouTube series that the NHL does, where he's just in his backyard by his pool. He's got the Stanley Cup. He's got his one leg crossed, and he's just sucking on the biggest cigar you've seen. And I'm just, this guy is a baller, man. Look at this. What a champion. Yeah. Some thoughts.
It's a beauty.
Yeah. Is Nick the most interesting man in the world?
Is that a rhetorical question or open-ended?
There isn't even a question mark there. I don't know if it seems like a rhetorical statement.
I have an interesting life. I'll say that.
Speaking of ASMR.
here we go.
There's an ASMR video featuring Pat LaFontaine in the mid-90s getting a cranial nerve exam. I've fallen asleep to it many times.
I'm about to take a nap after this show, and I might have to check that
fire
out.
Up
get
the
me in the mood for a nap.
LaFontaine cranial nerve exam.
Well, I got to mention my development at the gym before we go off air for our final show tomorrow. There is a third person at the gym. There's now a mafia, I guess, of individuals wearing flip-flops to work out. The worst thing about this, and I was texting Rosie while I worked out. Number one, this guy walked past me. I could smell the whiff of his dirty-ass toes. Number two, he's wearing a Nashville Predators hat, and that's what hurt me the most, because this guy's a hockey fan. Mm. And I'm like, dude, we're not in a dressing room. We're at a gym. So that's where I stand on that.
That's a power move. What was my reply to you yesterday?
Pardon me?
Was he reeking of a ton of money and rocking a dusty Waluigi mustache? Because if it is, I might know who it was.
No, it was not.
It wasn't
sadly,
Philip Forsberg?
No, not Philip Forsberg. But yeah, it's been a development in my life. Maybe it just speaks to how quiet my life has been the last couple of weeks, where I'm going on the airwaves and talking about dudes wearing flip-flops to work out, but it is sort of befuddling, not to use a big word, but I've never really seen that before. I just don't know how you work out in flip-flops, but I digress.
Befuddling.
Befuddling.
There you go.
There you go.
Big word. What? Thesaurus.
That's probably enough for the show today. I
agree.
It's what you want to talk about. It's brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. The hunting season gun safe sale is on now. Save up to $600 on Braun EV Series gun safes. Visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com. What's on the docket tonight, Nick? Just a little football, a little softball?
Yeah, I got some softball action, rounding out a season on one of my teams. And yeah, doing some more fantasy hockey prep. I'm going to tune in for some football and just chill out, you know, get ready for the weekend. It's going to be a big one, as per usual.
Atta B, love to hear. What about you, Brody? What's on the docket today?
Well, I got to watch. So I started Welcome to Wrexham. I got to catch up on those two new episodes and trying to make some signings for my esports team tonight. So,
Atta
boy.
Yeah, this is interesting. This is was something we haven't really talked about, but I think we should probably get into it tomorrow, because Brody keeps talking about this esports thing, and to me, it's
befuddling.
It's befuddling. So we'll have to get into that tomorrow.
Let's do it.
That'll do it for the show today. Blair and Barker coming at you next. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.